Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The NFL draft is now officially open.
This is draft season. John Schmoe, Tony Pauline back with you again. We are now 2 weeks from the start of the 2023 NFL draft. We'll have this show. We'll have a show next week. Maybe we'll try to squeeze two in the week of the draft as we get ready for the NFL draft coming your way in just a couple of weeks here. And we've been going through a lot of these players. We've talked about a lot of guys ad nausea here. So we want to take today to go through Tony's top tens at each offensive spot, but dig a little bit deeper on some specific guys. And we'll kind of talk about some players maybe we haven't touched on a lot here so far in draft season this year. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We're also going to answer some Twitter questions about some players on the offensive side of the ball that came in. But first, we did have a trade today. The Detroit Lions sending former third overall pick, if I remember correct, Jeffrey Okuda, to the Atlanta Falcons, Tony. And these are two teams, when we did our mock last week, I guess it was, I think we had cornerbacks going to both of those teams at some point in the draft. So how, if at all, do you think this trade impacts what the top 10 might look like?
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's going to impact it all that much. Now Detroit's in the market, more so in the market for a corner, where people are saying, you know, Detroit was the beginning of the Jalen Carter watch. Now you think, well, they're more prone to take a defensive back. I mean, listen, as far as I'm concerned, Okuda is just another Ohio State cornerback who never really lived up to expectations. I mean, he was taken so early, and, you know, they basically got, what, a fifth-round pick in return for him? So I don't think it's going to change it all that much. Maybe Atlanta looks in a different direction. But I don't think it's going to dismiss Atlanta from taking a corner. I don't think it's going to force Detroit to take a corner.
Yeah, I do think the need might fit available players at that spot for both those teams, too. What do you think about Detroit's first or second spot, too, and the Falcons, picking there in the top 10. So something to keep an eye on. And I don't think, Tony, we're going to have that third overall pick traded before draft night, because I think the return the Falcons are going to get is going to be very dependent on who's left on the board, right? So do you think we're going to see a trade of that third overall pick before we get to draft night, or do you think it's going to have to wait till the Falcons are on the Cardinals, rather, are on the clock?
I think we could. I mean, you know, it depends on how many teams are vying for that pick. You know, if it's say just one team.
Adam Schefter reported it was up to six.
Well, they're up to six that are really vying for it. I mean, if that's the case, it probably won't come down until the very end, you know, to who's ever bidding the most. And it also depends how far down does Arizona want to trade down. Obviously, right, the further down they trade down, the more they're going to want in return. I'd say it's about 50-50 right now that we know, you know, going in, because Atlanta's going to want to get the best deal. Then they got to get their board rearranged and figure out, you know, who they think will be there anyway, and what direction they're going to go, depending on how far they trade down.
All right, let's get to the quarterbacks here. Any other news, Tony, from Pro Days, by the way, that you want to get in before we start hitting these rankings?
No, I mean, we basically talked about it. There was, I think, only like one or two Pro Days that bled into the month of April. Joe Tippmann of Wisconsin had his Pro Day, hurt his hamstring on the first 40, didn't really do anything other than position drills, although there were six offensive line drills. We'll talk about him later on. Some small school guys, Ty Okuda, small school safety from Montana State, had a blistering pro day workout. It's going to help him get signed after the draft. It's not going to push him into the late rounds, though.
Miles Murphy had his personal workout too, right? And he put up some really good numbers that, you know, you're a big fan of his, so I guess you think those numbers are reflected in his tape, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the question about Miles Murphy, as far as I'm concerned, never centered around his athleticism or speed or anything like that. It's the ability to hold up against the run or whether he's going to be a liability against the run. I think that will, you know, just for those who like Miles Murphy, that's only going to confirm what we thought about him all along. For those who were his detractors, you know, maybe they're like, okay, yeah, 4.53 in the 40. You know, now he'll have no problem standing over tackle and basically being used as an upright pass rusher.
All right, I'm going to go through the top 10 quarterbacks here on Tony's list. The first five we talked about a lot, obviously. Bryce Young, number one. C.J. Stroud, number two. Both first-round grades on those two players. Hendon Hooker is his third-ranked quarterback. You have a second-round grade on him, I imagine, because of the injury, correct, Tony?
Absolutely.
And then you have first-round grades on Richardson and Levis, who are your fourth and fifth quarterbacks. Now we get into the bottom five. Aiden O'Connell out of Purdue, you have a third-round grade on him. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jaren Hall, fourth-round grades. And then Stetson Bennett and Tanner McKee with fifth-round grades. Who do you want to highlight there out of that top, that bottom five of that top 10?
Well, bottom five of the top 10. Let's go with Stetson Bennett. I mean, you know, I've seen Stetson Bennett with some day two grades. And I know he had a decent combine, but he's a smaller guy who doesn't have a big arm, who got the most out of his ability, and you got to give him credit for that. It's a great story, but again, we're projecting to the next level. And I just don't see how Stetson Bennett is going to fit in the first four rounds of the NFL draft. I think he will be an asset on the sidelines as an extra set of eyes, but I just don't see Stetson Bennett. I think Stetson Bennett's a guy that has limited upside. I don't see him as a developmental prospect. I think you're getting what you see with Stetson Bennett on the field. There are some off-the-field questions that are going to have to be answered in NFL war rooms around Stetson Bennett.
I want to ask you about the two mobile guys you have on this list, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. So I know some people have talked about moving up potential, you know, maybe even late second round, you know, day two type of pick. And then Jaren Hall out of BYU, who I thought had a rough Senior Bowl, but then I heard this week that he might have been playing that week on a bum ankle, so maybe that affected his play a little bit. Your thoughts on those two guys and how far they might rise up based on some of their athleticism?
You know, it's funny, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, it's funny what you said about the second round, because when I was at the combine, somebody said to me, he's going to go in the second day. I was like, ah, that's a load of you-know-what. There's no way he's going in a day two. And then I watched the film and I was like, wow. I mean, you know, here's a guy who has really made the transition from big-armed athlete into a quarterback and a passer, the way he ran that UCLA offense. I was very impressed. And then someone who was at the UCLA Pro Day said, Dorian Thompson-Robinson is going to be the best value at the quarterback position because someone's going to take him in the fourth round. There's going to be no pressure on him to start. He's got great tools. We interviewed him at length during Shrine Bowl practice, and he is a smart, intellectual guy. He's an artist, which he comes off sometimes as aloof to people. But when you really speak with him and you get you know, to talk to him and you get inside his brain, you understand he's more of an intellectual, thoughtful guy rather than, you know, saying what's at the top tip of his tongue. I could see late day two. I think fourth round is more like him. He's got great upside. And, you know, he's a terrific developmental prospect, as is Jaren Hall. I mean, Jaren Hall, you watch him. He's a very accurate quarterback, great pass placement. Doesn't have a huge arm, but gets the ball downfield and puts it in places where only his receivers can catch the ball. He's a mobile guy. The problem with Jaren Hall is he's never really dropped back from underneath center, and his footwork is terrible. That was an offensive coordinator I spoke with told me that at the combine. But then people say, well, listen, if Jaren Hall takes snaps from underneath center to throw the ball, it's going to be in a bootleg type of play where he rolls outside the pocket, which he did very well at BYU. Another good developmental guy. I like Dorian Thompson-Robinson better. I think he's got higher upside, but you can't dismiss Jaren Hall. A lot of buzz about both of those guys in the scouting community.
All right, let's jump over to running backs here, Tony. Bijan Robinson, number one, no surprise. Jahmyr Gibbs, number two, no surprise. You have a first/second-round grade on him. Zach Charbonnet, second-round grade, your third running back. I'm on board. We and you are in lockstep on those three. I was impressed with Charbonnet, what a good receiver he was, to be honest with you. He's kind of a very, very complete player. Devon Achane, a second, third-round grade on him. He's the little speedster from Texas A&M. I was a little disappointed with his receiving in tape in terms of what he does as a receiver. I think he needs to get better at that. And then Tajay Spears, who we talked about a bunch out of Tulane, is in your fifth hole there with a third-round grade. Then you have three other third-round grades here, Tony. I'm with you. I like Dwayne McBride's tape out of UAB. He's six for you. Kendre Miller, again, he's seven. Roshan Johnson, eight. And I think it makes sense you have those three guys next to each other because I do think they're both early down runners, but none of the three have a lot of catching stuff on their tape. So I think they're similar in that way. You have Israel Abanaconda out of Pittsburgh is in the fourth round, and Tank Bigsby out of Auburn in round number four. Who would you like to touch on there?
Let's talk about Roshan Johnson. I mean, he had, I guess, the handicap of playing behind Bijan Robinson. Roshan Johnson on most programs is the starting ball carrier. Now, he's got some limitations in the sense that he's not a perimeter ball carrier. He's a guy that, you know, you're going to run on the inside, and, you know, he's not really made up for this day and age of the NFL. NFL wants at the position, but he's a three down back. He catches the ball well. He can grind it on the inside. He's got good short area quickness, and he's a terrific blocker. And a guy like that is going to get drafted earlier than people expect, and he's going to get more playing time than people expect as a rookie, especially with the blocking, not only for the quarterback, but he was a good blocker for Bijan Robinson. So I think Roshan Johnson, people are going to look, ran in the high 4.5s. You know, he's not a real super quick creative runner. He's not like a Tajay Spears. But don't dismiss him because, again, we're projecting this to the next level. I think you're right about McBride. I mean, terrific ball carrier, not a good, real good pass catcher. He's going to have to improve that game. But that's been the hot name as far as in NFL war rooms at the running back position. That is the guy, that the player that teams really like a lot. They like his style. He has a terrific burst. He grinds it out. And I think he's going to go earlier than people think. And, you know, Charbonnet, I agree with you. I mean, Charbonnet is a guy who – he's got that old school mentality at 220 pounds where he will punish defenders and he drives his shoulders into opponents. But he's also plays like a smaller back with the footwork. Yeah. You see him set up defenders and make a miss. He creates his own yards. He's an exceptional pass catcher out of the backfield. I think this guy's going to be a bargain in round two of the draft.
Yeah, he's going to step into me day one starter next year. He just is. 100%, Tony, I'm with you. Just a couple more things with McBride so fans know about him. Has not done any of the offseason work because of a hamstring injury, so there's no testing numbers on him. He did measure at 5'10", 215 at the combine, so he's a really good size for an every down back. He was ridiculously productive at UAB. 233 carries, 1,700 yards, 19 touchdowns. And Tony, I thought his contact balance is excellent. Guys bounce off of him. He stays on his feet. He gets downhill. I'm with you. I think he's going to be a really nice addition as a third-round pick somewhere. Two guys I want to bring up that did not make your top 10 that I really like, and I've mentioned them here a couple times. I'm a big Chase Brown out of Illinois fan. I don't think there's a lot that guy does poorly. You talk about his ability in the passing game. I think it's very good. Now, he doesn't have great long speed. He's not the most explosive guy, but I think he's very shifty. He's quick. He sees the hole. He gets through it. He can make people miss. You know, he's missing that, you know, big explosive ability, I think, but I think he's got a low center of gravity. He can bounce off tackles. He breaks arm tackles. And then I think if you miss out on Tajay Spears, who I like a lot, go draft Eric Gray around later out of Oklahoma. You know, he's similarly sized. He's very bouncy. He can make you miss. He's very athletic. He's an excellent receiver. So if you want that third down back and you miss out on Tajay Spears, go get Eric Gray in the fourth round or fifth round, and I think you're going to be pretty happy with the player that you get.
Yeah, I think Gray is probably a little bit more than a third down back. Really hasn't performed all that well at the combine pro day because he's got a bad hamstring. But again, I mean, you look at recent history of Oklahoma backs that have been taken in the early part of day three, you know, fourth, fifth round area. They've had some very good success at the next level. And I believe that Gray will be next. He's explosive. He's got a terrific burst. He can beat defenders into the open field. He can get around the outside. He runs hard on the inside. So I agree with you on Gray. Chase Brown, you know, I like Chase Brown. I think he's solid, but he just doesn't stand out in any single area like some of the other guys do. And he's had a lot of carries. There's a lot of mileage on that body. Gets the most from his ability. High character guy. A lot of people like his character. I just think that Chase Brown is more of a third back. Now, not necessarily third down back, but a third back on a depth chart. And that kind of guy, that player tends to fall in the draft. That's why you have him as a fifth round pick.
Yeah, no, look, and I agree when you, but then you look at his testing, Tony. 4-4-3-40, 1-5-10 yard split, a 40 vert, a 10-7 broad. So then you think maybe there's something more there. So I'm curious to see where he winds up and what kind of opportunity he gets. But I think most people are with you. Most people have him in the fourth and fifth round in that area. I'm curious to see if he can give a team a little bit more than that, given you mentioned it. I mean, he was a bell cow for Illinois. He carried the ball a lot and was very productive.
Absolutely. I think one of the other guys who keep an eye on is Chris Rodriguez of Kentucky. Ran much faster at his pro day, 4.52. And people were concerned he's going to be a 4.6 guy. You know, he's got that sort of Zach Charbonnet mentality where he's a punishing downhill ball carrier. You watch the tape with Chris Rodriguez. He's never brought down by one defender. I mean, he's carrying the pile. So if you're looking for a third down running back, a short yardage ball carrier, you can even give him the ball on first down, I think a guy like Chris Rodriguez, who I have as a late fourth, early fifth round pick, is somebody to look at.
And I want to honorable mention Deuce Vaughn here just because he's fun. He's 5'5", he's like 180, but that guy is a jitterbug, man. I know he didn't test well at all, which I think surprised some people, but wow. Like, you get him one-on-one in the open field, you're not tackling him. He's making you miss. He's only 5'5", I get it. I think if you get him with a creative offensive coach, use him like the Eagles used to use Darren Sproles, and just have some fun with the guy. I think he's probably, because of the testing, not going to go into the fifth or sixth round. But I think you get him with the right team, Tony, he's going to make some impactful plays in the NFL.
Yeah, a guy like that, he's got to do well as a pass catcher. He's also going to have to show some return skills, because a smaller jitterbug guy like that's got to prove that he can be productive returning punts in camp this summer.
100% agree with you. All right, let's move on to wide receivers here. A lot of names we could talk about here in wide receiver, Tony. Your top five is obviously guys that we've talked a lot about, so I'll get through them real quick. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is your number one out of Ohio State. You have a first-round grade on him. Also, Jordan Addison out of USC. Quentin Johnson is your third wide receiver, also a first-round pick out of TCU. Zay Flowers and Jalin Hyatt, both with 1-2 grades and first, beginning of second, round out your top five. Then you have Cedric Tillman at number six out of Tennessee. He's Jalin Hyatt's running mate. Kayshon Boutte out of LSU, who I think you're higher on than other people. We'll talk about that. Jaden Reed out of Michigan State with a second-round grade at number eight. Josh Downs at nine out of North Carolina. They're kind of right up against each other with your grades. And then Jonathan Mingo out of Mississippi with your 10th-ranked receiver here. So highlight whoever you want to highlight.
Let's go with Boutte. I mean, you're right. I probably do have Boutte rated higher than most, but I remember what he showed in 2021. And I keep going back to the fact that LSU receivers are much better players on Sunday than they are on Saturday. And they're darn good receivers on Saturday. And that's been the history of that program. Granted, there's a new coach there in Brian Kelly. But again, I mean, and we spoke about this in September and October. Where was Kayshon Boutte? Because he hadn't shown up. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the season, the second half of the season, it started to click for him with Jaden Daniels. And I remember Boutte initially said that he was returning to LSU. Then he made a late decision to enter the draft. I just go back to what I saw in 2021, the flashes, the dominance, and I think that's the real Kayshon Boutte. The other guy is Jonathan Mingo. Keep an eye on him. He reminds me of a faster version of A.J. Brown. He's a big body guy, sort of that, you know, he's a 6'1", 220-pound guy with soft hands. He gets in the crowd, ran much faster at the combine than anyone expected. And he
does not look that fast on tape when you watch him.
Well, he doesn't, but that's what happens with a lot. You got to remember, a lot of these guys, you know, they train for the combine for the 2 months before the combine. And a lot of these guys just don't know how to run. I mean, running is a lot of technique. It's a lot of form. And these guys don't know how to do it. That's why they go and they'll run faster times than people expect. Now he's got to transition that 40 time into football speed. That's an art. That also has to do with coaching. And a guy who I absolutely love, Cedric Tillman of Tennessee. Some people tell me that there are teams out there that have Cedric Tillman rated higher than Jalin Hyatt, his teammate. And that's a combination of Cedric Tillman moving up boards and Jalin Hyatt moving down boards. Cedric Tillman, if you watch him, he plays the receiver position like a linebacker. I mean, don't watch Cedric Tillman when he's catching the ball, if you're able to. Watch what happens when he's not even involved in the play, because he will come off the line of scrimmage and he will dominate the defensive back that's supposed to be covering him just to intimidate him, and he gets results. And remember, Cedric Tillman was the number one receiver going into the season last year at Tennessee, had an injury, Then Jalen Hyatt stepped in and really took over, did a good job. But Cedric Tillman was the guy last year who, entering the season, was number one guy and was the highest rate. It was a highly rated receiver by NFL scouts. Just had that injury, which kind of set him back a little bit.
Yeah, high ankle sprain. He had that tightrope surgery to get back into the year. And I was told by a couple people that, look, he didn't ever really look 1,000% this year. And if fans want to get a better look at what his true athleticism is, because Tony, look, I'm going to go back and watch his 2021 tape. I haven't done it yet. But when I watched his 22 tape, I saw more of a possession receiver. I didn't see a really explosive guy. I saw like a big possession guy, which is fine. You know, kind of like a Michael Thomas type when he came out of Ohio State, that type of, you know, skill set. But I'm told if you go back to his 2021 tape, he had monster games against Alabama and Georgia in 2021, and he looks like a more explosive player. So I would invite people to go back and look at his film from last year, given he wasn't dealing with that injury.
And again, you know, look at him. You know, everybody watches, you know, can he run good routes? Does he catch the ball? And obviously that's the most important.
Yeah.
But what really turns me on, what really impresses me is what he does when he's away from the play, when he's not even involved in the play. Because sometimes you'll get receivers who just lazily come off the line because they're not involved in the action. Not this guy. I mean, he fires off the line and he fires into his defensive back and takes him out of the action, even if the play's on the other side of the field, which I think really says something about his football personality.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mingo. He's 220 pounds, too. He's a big, big dude. So you want a bigger wide receiver that's physical, Mingo's your guy. And then I'll throw a couple other guys out there that I like, Tony, that didn't make your top 10. I'm sure they're coming up shortly thereafter. One other outside receiver I like that for me is a second-round guy. Most other people have him in the third or fourth round. I really like A.T. Perry. I think he's a very good player. For a guy his size, I think he moves well. He tracks the ball well down the field. I think if you're looking for an outside receiver, he's very productive this year with a pretty good quarterback. I think he's somebody you can take a look at on day two at some point. And I think Marvin Mims can go outside a little bit. He's very explosive. I know he played the slot a lot at Oklahoma. He's not the biggest guy in the world. I get all that. I think he has the ability to get outside of 5'11". I think he's going to be a very productive player and an explosive player at the NFL level. I think even though he didn't run a huge route tree there, I think he has the shake inside the side where he can develop that. So those are two guys that I think will definitely be day two picks that I think can be pretty effective.
Yeah, I agree with you on the day two picks. I mean, Marvin Mims also brings the ability to be a return specialist at the next level. It's not that he's small. He's 5'11", 183. He's just not a tall guy. He catches the ball very well. Again, you got to see how those Oklahoma guys transition to an NFL NFL offense, because basically they're running go routes and they get to freelance. A.T. Perry just tore up Shrine Bowl practice. No one was able to cover him. He's a long guy. He catches the ball very well. He's a guy who ran much better than expected at the combine. 4.47. People were expecting in the mid 4.5s. You know, again, I mean, who are you going to move out? There's only a certain number of spots in the first top in the first 2 days of the draft. Only a certain number of receivers are going to go. It's not a great receiver class. But I think when you talk about it in the middle portion, you're looking at potential a lot of real good number three receivers at the next level. Different types of receivers like Mims, the smaller, quicker guy who can get downfield, or like A.T. Perry, who you're going to run those underneath crossing patterns and those underneath the routes with.
Yeah, I think you're going to get good value at wide receiver in the third round, Tony. I think guys are going to get that deep here. Maybe even some of the guys in your top 10, the two guys I mentioned. And I'll throw two other names out. I think Charlie Jones is a very safe pick. I know he's a smaller guy, but he runs really well. He changes direction well. His testing was excellent. And he catches everything. He's got great hands and he's smooth. I think he'll transition to the slot at the pro level, and I think he'll be a really good slot receiver if you want a safe pick, you know, end of round three, start around four. And then I'll throw Matt Landers out there, who was a Georgia transfer, right? I think he did two steps, was a Georgia, then Toledo, then Arkansas, I think, right, if I remember correctly.
Exactly.
And he's a bigger guy. He's fast. He can make plays down the field. And I think if you want to shoot for the stars, that's a guy that maybe on day three you want to pick that has some big-time upside.
That's it. That upside is what Matt Landers is. He's got to become more productive. He's got to expand his route tree. He's really got to really step up his game. And he's got to start to play to those athletic numbers, specifically the speed. Because I think everybody was shocked that he ran a 4.38 at the combine. No one would have thought that he was going to get under 4.45, if that, except for maybe his trainers going into the combine. So that speed is something we know he has. He's got to transition it to the field. Charlie Jones, I mean, Aiden O'Connell's number one target, very sure-handed. People know the ball, or the defenses knew the ball was going in his direction. They couldn't stop him. Has some, I believe, what I've been told, injury issues with his hips, but still a real good, like you said, you know, slot type of guy. One guy that's not going to make my top 10, but I think is going to have a lot of success at the next level is Demario Douglas of Liberty. 5'8.5", so he's small, 179 pounds, ran in the low 4.4s at the combine. But again, like A.T. Perry, who I mentioned before, was unstoppable during Shrine Game practices. And he is your sort of Nathaniel Tank Dell type of player in that he's small. He runs great routes. He's explosive. He's quick. He's uncoverable. But the problem is he's short. So, and there's not a big market for that type of player in the NFL draft.
All right, let's move over to tight ends here, Tony. We have tight end, O-line, then we're going to get to your questions. Your only true first-round grade is Michael Mayer out of Notre Dame. The Dalton Kincaid is your second-ranked tight end. Luke Musgrave, your third. They both have first/second-round grades on them. Sam Laporta is your fourth tight end. I have him ahead of Musgrave on my list, but they're close. Darnell Washington, the big tight end out of Georgia, is your fifth guy. Then you get to one of Tony's favorites, Tucker Kraft, who we've talked a lot about here. Then we have Zach Kuntz, third round out of Old Dominion. I'm with you on that. I think his tape is pretty great with his athleticism. Luke Schoonmaker, who's a safer pick, two-way player out of Michigan, right? Converted wide receiver. Josh Wiley out of Cincinnati is your ninth guy. And then Brenton Strange out of Penn State is number 10. Pick who you want to highlight here, Tone.
Well, let's start with this. I mean, I think both Dalton Kincaid and Luke Musgrave are going to end up as first-round picks. I don't know that on my board, they don't have first-round grades. I do think that they're going to end up as first-round picks. I mean, let's talk about Zach Kuntz. I mean, Kuntz only played, I think he played 5-6 games last year,
yep.
Then was injured, had no postseason, went to the combine, blew it up. But Kuntz was a guy who, coming into the season, had a high grade from scouts, off the film from 2021. He's big, he's athletic, he's tall, he's a terrific target, he catches the ball very well. He's got to improve his blocking, but, you know, they really didn't ask him to do that too much at Old Dominion, a Conference USA school. Actually, I believe it's a Sun Belt school now.
Penn State transfer, right, Tony? Penn State transfer?
Correct. And I think the injury last season, 2022, really stunted his development, but he's got a tremendous amount of upside. Laporta, we've talked about. Darnell Washington is going to be an interesting guy to watch on draft weekend. I mean, where does he go? He's a fun player to watch. As I've mentioned a couple times, after the championship game against TCU, when he got to combine training, he was 280 pounds. They got him down to 264, but his playing weight is 280. And I know he ran a 4.64 at the combine, but when you watch the film, you see more 4.8 film. But again, he's an offensive line size tight end who catches the ball very well. He's going to be one of those guys when it's third and goal on the 6 or 7, you're going to put the ball up there and throw it in his direction and let him get vertical for the jump ball, because you can out jump and outreach everybody and catch the pass. It's just a matter of, where do you draft Darnell Washington? Some people think first round. I said, no way. I don't think that's possible. I think more mid to late second round. Tucker Kraft of South Dakota State, again, terrific pass catcher, plays the tight end position like a receiver. Didn't run as fast as I think a lot of people expected at the combine, but he is an outstanding pass catcher who also does a good job blocking.
Yeah, and then Brenton Strange, Tony, out of Penn State, tested really well. You go and you look at the tape. They use him as almost a run-after-the-catch guy, where they get it to him in short areas on short passes. They do. We trust you to break tackles. Go and make a play, and he does. He's a good athlete. You know, that Penn State quarterback situation is not great. So I would like to see him with a better quarterback where he's running some more routes down the field. And I think a team might get some pretty good value on him in the fourth round. And he might be a lot better player than that, given what he did at Penn State.
A lot of upside there. You just have to develop the complete game. He's got to turn into a complete player. He's got to improve his blocking, but he catches the ball very well.
Yeah.
When the ball is thrown in his direction. One guy to keep an eye on, especially day three, is Elijah Higgins of Stanford. And what reason I say that is, you know, Higgins is a bigger receiver, 6'3", 235 pounds. I project him as a move tight end. So it's not just draft night. Let's see what happens with Elijah Higgins moving forward. Our team's going to use him as a receiver. John, you know, because I believe you were interviewing him at the Senior Bowl, and you said that teams are talking to him, yeah, as a potential move tight end, and Higgins is on my tight end board.
He should be. I think that's where he's going to get drafted, Tony. I agree. And then, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, these receiving tight ends in this area. I'll throw out another guy that I think will be your classic two-way tight end. That's Payne Durham, who I think is a big guy. He's a blocker. He's got good hands. He's just not a very good athlete, which is fine. But he can be a guy that's going to grab you 40 catches a year. He's going to block for you. He's got good hands. He's good in the red zone. I think Payne Durham at Purdue is a guy that I think could be a nice little player on day three that can help be a solid tight end in this league for a long time.
Yeah, if you draft him in the sixth round and he catches 40 passes for you, yeah, I mean, you're going to be over the moon with that type of production. But I agree with you. He's a number two tight end, and he's a guy at 6'5 and a half, 254 pounds. If it's third and three, you're going to put him on the field as a blocker, or you're going to send him 4 yards off the line of scrimmage, 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. You're going to throw the ball to him, and he's going to catch the ball, whether he's standing there by himself or whether he's in a crowd. We saw it at the Senior Bowl. I mean, he gets vertical. He's not, you know, he's not going to get that high, but he gets vertical, and he competes to come away with the reception, and he usually does with defenders draped on his back. The thing is he's not going to scream down the field, split the seam, running 4.6s, running 4.55s, and outrace safeties down the field or linebackers for the deep reception. He is what he is, a good blocker, a good pass catcher, but someone who is sort of a miniature version, if I can say, of Darnell Washington. You know, not the fastest guy in the world, but very reliable in all areas.
All right, let's go to the offensive line. We put these guys all into one group, and we'll go deeper than the 10, obviously. This is Tony's order. Paris Johnson, Broderick Jones, Peter Skoronski. Only three guys with pure first-round grades in that order. Not much separating those guys. You have Skoronski as a guard on your board, not a tackle, just for the record. Osiris Torrance and John Michael Schmitz as 1-2s. Darnell Wright as a second-round pick out of Tennessee. A lot of people have him getting into the first round in some of the mock drafts I've been watching. Joe Tippmann as a 1-2 center out of Wisconsin. Anton Harrison, the tackle out of Oklahoma with a second-round grade. He's number 8 on your board. Luke Whipler, second-round grade at number 9. I actually have him ahead of Tippmann. I like his tape better than I like Tippmann's, but they're close on your board. And then Blake Freeland, the big tackle who had awesome athletic numbers at the Combine, at your 10th offensive line spot, Tone. Who do you want to touch on here that – I don't think we've talked much about Anton Harrison or Darnell Wright on this podcast, if you want to touch on those two guys. But
yeah, Darnell Wright, actually, I have a 1-2 grade in my mock draft. I actually have him going in the bottom half of round one. I think with Darnell Wright is everyone projected him as a, you know, a big immobile right tackle, but those testing numbers at the combine were off the charts. So now – you think you can do more things with him? I can.
And he was good at the Senior Bowl too, by the way. He was excellent.
He is a big, I mean, he's got an NFL build. The lower body is thick. It's powerful. He's a nasty blocker. Can absolutely see a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars who need a right tackle, if there's no cornerback there, taking Darnell Wright late part of round one. Joe Tippmann in certain areas of the scouting community is absolutely loved. There are some people who tell me that if we assume that Peter Skoronski is going to be a tackle or is on tackle boards, which he's not, he's my guard. He's on my guard board. But a lot of people out there think that Tippmann will be the first interior offensive lineman to be selected in the draft over Osiris Torrance, over John Michael Schmitz. He will be the first one. He'll be the first center off the board. Have to wait and see. But there is that definite point of view, you know, in the scouting community, in war rooms. It depends on the type of lineman that you want. If you want the zone blocker, if you want the guy who gets out on the second level and can take linebackers out of the action, you're going with Luke Whipler. If you want that bigger punch in the mouth type of power gap blocker, you're taking Tippmann from Wisconsin. Wisconsin always produces those guys. And I think John Michael Schmitz is somewhere in the middle. He's a good power gap blocker, not as good as Tippmann. He's a decent zone blocker, not as good as Luke Whipler, but he does a little bit of everything well. So it'll be interesting to see, because a lot of teams, including the New York teams, the New York Jets and the New York Giants, that really moving towards the draft, want to come out of it with a center. And I think it's going to be a situation where the demand outstrips the supply at the position.
Yeah, and I like Whipler, too, as a second-round ppicket center. I'm with you there, Tony. Blake Freeland, I think he's got a lot of work to do in his power, but we've seen some of these not so strong but athletic offensive tackles work out. Go back to Colton Miller a few years ago, right, who came out and he was going to be high. He was a first-round pick. Freeland's not going in the first round. But similar deal, right? Tested really well, but he just didn't have a lot of power. So I think if you can develop that a little bit for Freeland, he could become a starter in the NFL.
tested off the charts. I mean, he was tested off the charts and had a great pro day, did some outstanding position drill work. I was told that they were doing that sort of hoop drill where he's down picking up tennis balls and things like that to show his bend and his flexibility. And he's got the growth potential, 6'8", 302 pounds. So, you know, you could put 10, 15, even 20 pounds on him. Hopefully you keep that athleticism and he improves his power, he improves his run blocking, improves his sustainability and pass protection. So with Blake Freeland, you know, it's a situation where if you draft him in day two, you're not going to expect him to start in 2023. You're going to get him into the NFL weight training program, develop his game. Maybe he started the latter half of his rookie season, but you're looking down the road with Freeland because of those outstanding tools.
A few names I want to throw at you outside of that top 10, Tony. Steve Avila, I went back. We've talked about him as a guard. I watched his 2021 tape at center. Yeah. It was good. Like, if I'm sitting there day two and I need a center and he's there, I like his tape a lot, to be honest with you. I think he's going to be an early second-round pick, and a team's going to get a really good player.
Power gap guy. Yeah. Although he moved very well at the combine. So he's not a zone blocker, but it's not going to be a liability if on occasion you want to send him out in the second level to take out a linebacker. More of a power gap guy. There are some people who like him at the center position. I just think he's been so dominant at guard, just leave him there.
Get it. Cody Mock is another interesting player. He's played left tackle in North Dakota State. He played center and guard at the Senior Bowl. That's where people have him, really, because he has very short arms. Just a really good athlete. I think he's got to work on some of his strength and stuff like that, but he can move, man. You know, we didn't mention this off the top. He did his 3-cone last week, and it was like a six. It was a sub-7-second 3-cone drill, which is ridiculous for an offensive lineman. So I think he's a guy that's going to go in the second round, and he's got a lot of versatility.
Nasty blocker as well. Guy who works to finish off opponents. The versatility is going to be key for him. I think it may take Mock some time before he's ready to step into an NFL lineup. You know, you're going to have to develop him, improve his strength, and figure out what position you're going to want to use him at.
Yeah, Matthew Bergeron, another guy, Tony, who's a very solid player. I know there's people who are split on that. Is he a tackle? Is he a guard? I would try him a tackle. If he fails to guard, that's fine. I think he's going to be a day two pick that's going to be a good player pretty quickly in the NFL. And then two other guys, or at least one of the guys that I've heard gaining a lot of steam here, Tony, is Chandler Zavala out of NC State, the big guard and also a power guy, but he tested very well. I think it's a back injury for him, right? I think he had back surgery last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think Zavala is someone out of NC State that I think could go on day two and people like him at guard.
Yeah, I think day two is a little rich for my rankings right now with Zavala. I think he's more of a day three guy, but still has a decent upside. Was at the Shrine game, played relatively well, had a good career at North Carolina State. Testing numbers were solid. They weren't off the charts. They were solid. But a guy who's got a real nice build and blocks with solid fundamentals.
Yeah, no question about it. I want to get your take. Ricky Stromberg, Tony, he's a guy that some people like as a late round center. Your thoughts on him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a guy who, again, more of a power gap guy, nasty blocker, always looking for someone to hit, can control opponents in one-on-one blocking situations, not someone you're going to put in motion, ask him to block on a second level too often. I think a guy, when I watch him, gets a little bit upright, he's got to learn to bend his knees and consistently block with leverage.
Yeah, and Zavala, by the way, had back surgery in 2021. So that's something that teams I know are investigating as well. They worry about offensive linemen with back injuries. All right. We got some questions coming in here. Here we go. At @CLT_New York, who are the other wide receivers that you would consider dogs, guys that are very competitive, you know, competing every snap, besides Zay Flowers and Tank Gerrell that you really like in this draft?
I think Jaden Reed is one of those guys. I mean, we saw that during Senior Bowl practices. Go down the list a little bit. Xavier Hutchinson of Iowa State, not the fastest guy in the world, but he runs good routes. He finds ways to get open. He's been very, very productive at Iowa State for a couple of years now. A guy who, again, the 40 time is going to push him down draft boards, but he can play at the next level. Someone who could actually go undrafted is Dante Demas of Maryland. 6'3", 212 pounds. Had a significant knee injury last year, rebounded well. The further he gets away from that knee injury, the healthier he gets. He is a terrific pass catcher. Good quickness, reliable hands, and again, I have him right now on the cusp of being a seventh round pick, but someone who's going to fall through the cracks because of the injury, because he didn't test well, but I think could be a real good next level receiver.
Okay, let's go to Allinger 84. How do you like slash what do you hear about North Carolina wide receiver Antoine Green?
Good size. Tested better than expected. Has had some problems with drops in the past, not consistently. I think he's going to – I have him right now as a priority free agent. I mean, I've got right now on my board 35 receivers, which are draftable grades. It's going to come down to a numbers game with them. If he's not a seventh-round pick, he'll be signed right after the draft.
All right, we've already talked about these three, but I'll ask a question in case you want to add anything, Tony. William Frisch Jr., I'm interested in what rounds wide receivers Jonathan Mingo, Jaden Reed, and Xavier Hutchinson may go. Thank you.
Okay, well, we did Hutchinson right now. I have him as a day three pick. I have him as a early six-round choice. Maybe he goes a little bit earlier than that. But again, you know, you look at the guys in front of him. Hutchinson runs a 4.54, and the rest of these guys are running the 4.4s and the 4.3s. Who were the other two guys?
Mingo and Reed, for what round they're going to go.
Mingo I have right now as a second rounder. Reed I also have as a second rounder. I think that second round you've got some good receivers and guys really with less question marks. I mean, Quentin Johnston, the big athlete, and we talked about him here, doesn't run good routes, doesn't consistently catch the ball properly with his hand. Jordan Addison, terrific receiver, outstanding route runner, lacks the downfield speed, and he's got a thin body. But when you look at the second round, Jaden Reed, Josh Downs, Jonathan Mingo, Tank Dell, Marvin Mims. I mean, these are guys, Cedric Tillman, who I mentioned before. These are guys who may not have the upside of some of those other receivers, but you know what you're getting.
At Morphins Etevins, he wants to know about Stetson Bennett, how his pre-draft process has gone. Well, not well. And then he wants to know about, I don't know, have you done these yet, Tony? He wants to know about kicker Jake Moody. Will he get drafted?
I did. Kickers are the last group I do. Bennett, I mean, he had a good combine. He threw much better than people expected at the combine, and people were praising him. You know, it's the off the field stuff that you're going to have to settle with. The bottom line is this: he was, as we talked about earlier, I don't want to be redundant. He was a terrific college quarterback. It's a great story, but again, we're projecting to the next level, and I don't see Stetson Bennett as anything other than a number three quarterback. On Sunday, as far as the punters and kickers, let me get there right quick. Jake Moody, if he's drafted, it's probably going to be in the late part of the seventh round. I think his teammate, the punter, Brad Robbins, is probably a fourth or fifth rounder. And I'm sorry, a sixth rounder. And Adam Corsick of Rutgers is slightly ahead of him. So to answer the question about Moody, I have him right now as a PFA. There are some people tell me he's going to get drafted. They tell me that there's going to be a big market in this draft for punters and kickers, which means that more of those guys could get selected.
All right. Old school Giants had a question about Reed and Mingo. We already touched on them. We'll skip that. TTJ_NYG wants to know, who's your favorite day three quarterback and day three running back?
Well, I think my favorite, we talked about that, would be Dorian Thompson Robinson. If he gets into day three, I mean, for reasons that I mentioned earlier on, same thing with Jaren Hall. I mean, I like Jake Haener of Fresno State a bit, but he's more of an intermediate timing passer. Jake Haener's not going to be able to throw the ball 40 yards downfield for the big play. But if you're running a West Coast offense and you want to keep things in the underneath with those underneath routes, that is Haener of Fresno State is a guy to keep an eye on. As far as my favorite day three running back, mentioned Chris Rodriguez. Cameron Peebles of Appalachian State is a tough, nasty downhill ball carrier. Doesn't have great speed, but a guy who just runs over people. Big fan of Muhammad Ibrahim of Minnesota. Had the injury, rebounded well from the injury. He's a guy who, you know, he's not the biggest guy, 5'7½", 23 pounds. He's not the fastest guy, but they can't tackle him. All he does is pick up positive yardage. Got to spend some time with him at the Shrine Game. Just an impressive human being. And I think he's one of those guys who probably fits into the seventh round, but he's going to sneak up on people. He's going to be a productive third back, fourth back at the next level.
All right, I think this is the last question. I'll do one more skim through here. From Ryan Wilson, can you tell us what scouts think of three players, Olu Oluwatimi, Voorhees, the kid that tore his ACL at the combine, and then Tuipulotu.
Let's go from the bottom up. Tuliopo didn't run. I think he had a hamstring. It didn't run at the combine. The USC Pro Day was pouring rain, so we didn't do too much testing there. I believe it was a hamstring issue. He's 260 pounds, but he plays big football. He's explosive. I think he's going to be a real good end in a 4-3. You're looking at a day two pick. Voorhees, unfortunately, had that injury during combine position drills where he tore his ACL. Everybody probably has watched the video where he's on crutches. His leg is all bandaged up. He gets on the bench press, and he pumps up 38 reps. I don't know if he gets drafted. If he gets drafted, it's in the seventh round. I think as a player himself is, he's more of a power gap guy. He's an intelligent guy, locked with solid fundamentals. You can see him keeping his head on a swivel, helping out his line mates. Not the greatest athlete in the world, but I think someone that can back up at the next level at multiple positions. He also has some experience at that tackle besides guard. And who was the first player?
Olu Oluwatimi.
There's a wide opinion of Oluwatimi.
Great center story. Out of Michigan, by the way.
Right, center out of Michigan. Great story. Got the most from his ability. Had a good year at Michigan after transferring from Virginia. A lot of people liked his intelligence, his approach. But there are people like me who, while he's great on Saturday, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's not the strongest guy in the world. He's not plowing holes open in the middle of the line. He's not the super athletic guy that can get out on the second level. You can pull across the line of scrimmage. I have him as a day three pick. But again, we've seen a lot of day three centers who go on to start on Sunday.
I agree. I have him as day three guy too. What scared me about him, Tony, when he was at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, he struggled a lot with speed and power. It almost looked like it was too fast for him. And that worries me a lot.
And that's what you see on film. I mean, that is what you see on film with him. He's, like I said, it's a great story. You know, he's overachieved, and there's a place for that at the next level. It's just that those types of guys rarely get selected early in the draft.
Tony, awesome stuff. We will be back next week with defense. We'll do interior defensive linemen, edge players, off-ball linebackers, cornerbacks, and safeties. So we'll knock those out for you next week. Then we're draft week, folks. We're rocking and rolling here. We're getting going, and we're getting ready. It's coming fast, and we'll have answers, and then we'll have news exactly what our coverage is going to be during draft week as well. So make sure you stay tuned for that. On draft season, Tony, anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
It's close. You know, it's funny. You do all this preparation, and all of a sudden, before you know it, it's here. So it's going to be fun. And what's going to happen is, just so you know, is teams are going through their final draft meetings now. And the information over the next week to 10 days is going to start to leak out as to which guys are not as highly rated as Twitter Draft World has them, and which guys are much, much, much more higher rated. And you'll start to hear a lot of information over the next week to 10 days. Hopefully I'll be on the cutting edge of breaking it, I hope. But we'll see what happens, and we'll have it here.
Yeah, make sure you follow Tony on Twitter, Pro Football Network, all that good stuff. Check it out. And again, this is when the mock drafts start to matter, because you're right, Tony. I can tell you, the Giant Scouts are starting to lunch. They're in the building. They're doing their meetings. They're building the board. All the teams are doing it. So this is when the information that starts coming out is either total smokescreen and they're lying, or there might be some kernels of truth out there. You just got to figure out what's real and what's not, and parse and move stuff around. For Tony Pauline, I'm John Schmelt. Thanks for joining us on draft season. We'll see you next week when we take a deeper look at defense, everybody.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.